This is Movies, a podcast by the Act of Cinema. And with me today, he's drinking a tall Coca-Cola. Of course, it's Hans. Hans, how are you doing tonight? Aren't you worried about diabetes? Aren't you worried about dying?
No, it's sugar-free, calorie-free Coca-Cola.
And what's wrong with Diet Coke?
I don't know. I don't like the taste of Diet Coke.
That's crazy. The sugar-free, yeah. I will have a sugar-free Coca-Cola at the movie theater because the Diet Coke there is not available. They don't give you that option because I guess it's just a really poor person theater. But I will go for a Diet Coke any day of the week. And I was raised a Pepsi kid.
What is that, aspartame or whatever? I can't taste that shit. I can't.
It's in your cup right now, too. Take a look at that bottle. It's the same exact thing. Go ahead.
Is it? It's just a different flavor. I don't know. It just tastes differently.
They're trying to adhere to the original Coke flavor. Yeah, see? It doesn't make a difference. They used to put Splenda, I believe, in Diet Coke, which is also, I think, that is still aspartame. But they used to advertise it on the corner.
It's awful. I hate all of those replacement for sugar additives, so I'd rather not have anything. I tried Splenda. I've tried there's another one with like a little green packet. They're all shit, so I just drink my coffee with milk and no sugar. I got used to that instead of using the other type of sweeteners. I don't like the aftertaste of that shit. So I guess maybe that's why I like this one better than Diet.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, we didn't have an option to choose between Diet Coke and sugar-free Coke. People in the Holocaust. Was there Coca-Cola back then?
I think so. I think there might have been. They should do a Coca-Cola commercial in Auschwitz. I think that would be very charming, especially now when Jews are such a big thing again. And it's this polarizing thing. You're either for them or against them. And it seems like anti-Semitism has been partially mainstreamed. You could probably get away with it. You could probably get away with it.
What would it be? Just a bunch of just skinny people being like, and then when they smile, they have no teeth.
Yeah. You know, I just realized, are you trying to segue this into Zone of Interest? Mm-hmm. Is that the goal here? Well, I thought we agreed we were doing Roadhouse for this episode, not Zone of Interest.
I thought we were doing a double feature.
Double feature? I honestly still have not seen Zone of Interest yet. I'm guilty. Okay. I watched Roadhouse twice instead.
In the theater both times, right?
I wish I saw this in the theater. You know what I also watched today? Amazon Prime, they have, I guess, raised the game. Ricky Stenicki, starring John Cena and Andrew Santino and Zac Efron.
Ricky Stenicki.
It's about a group of friends who make up that they have a fourth friend in order to get out of things they don't want to go to, like a baby shower. And then there's a bris that they have to, I mean, this is Jewish, that they have to go to. And the wife, I guess, has the idea, why don't we have Ricky Stenicki circumcise the baby? And Andrew Santino's like, that's a great idea. So then they have to hire John Cena, who's a stripper, male prostitute, magician, musician, to go and be that guy. And then it's basically kind of the Cable Guy, where he gets involved in these guys' lives and then he excels and is way more likable to their families and friends than any of them are. And it fucking sucked. But I watched it and I laughed a few times. I woke up today. I got the preview for that on Amazon Prime. I was like, yeah, I guess I'm going to start my day watching Ricky Stenicki.
Yeah. Andrew Santino vehicle in 2024. Sounds like a good way to spend an hour and a half. That sounds... Yeah, that there's nothing about anything you just said that makes me want to watch this. It's weird because it sounds like they're doing John Cena like they did The Rock at the beginning of his career, where it was just like, we're just going to put you, you're a gigantic muscular man. So now you're, what is it, a security guard, but you're gay. You know, like on Be Cool, where The Rock is like, I'm a security guy, but I'm also like a gay cowboy type of thing. It sounds like they're doing that with John Cena, but I thought John Cena was already established as I guess the goofy muscle man. So I guess it makes sense, right?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I did laugh a few times at it. It's not a good movie. It doesn't come around, and it's from the director of Green Book, by the way. It took me an hour and 40 minutes to realize, huh, this comedy feels very 1990s. Hey, this is set in Providence and Boston. Oh, it's a Farrelly Brothers movie. And then it all made sense to me. So that's what you're in for with Ricky Stenicki. And what a follow-up to Roadhouse it was.
Yeah, it sounds very Bucky Larson, where it's like, yeah, we just got, they're in comedy movies. It's funny. The setup doesn't make any sense, but
Nope.
we'll have the main guy just be funny. It'll work. It sounds very much like that time where they would take those chances with comedies where it would just be like, yeah, it's Nick Swartzen and he's got a bowl cut and he's got a tiny penis, but he wants to be a porn star. Fuck it. 30 million, go make that movie, or Strange Wilderness. Do you remember Strange Wilderness, where the big joke was that Jonah Hill and Jay Baruchel, I think, would talk about nature videos, and then there's like the trailer had a clip of like a shark, and then the shark farts, and then Jonah Hill would be like, "Oh, I'm a shark that's farting, ha ha ha," and like that was the joke. Do you remember
I have no recollection of this. You could have just
that?
made up a movie for all I know. I've never heard it.
I
What I
think.
was thinking of is the Patrice O'Neill, Brooke Shields
Oh.
movie. What was it, Furry
Oh man.
Vengeance?
Yeah. No. Still. Let me play this trailer because I remember that the Strange Wilderness trailer, like, it was around the time of like Pineapple Express, I think, or that in that type of comedy. So it was like, oh, cool, we got another one of those. And then it's one of those. The trailer has all the jokes that the movie is going to deliver. Can you see
All
the
right, let's
screen?
take a look at this. Yeah, I can see. You're being recommended Stavi's World, Ian Fidance and Mike Racine. Two comics with no fans at all. All right, let's take a look. I'm not getting any audio, though. Do you have this on mute?
Oh shit, really?
Steve Zahn.
Remember him?
I do remember him.
I mean, he was always great. I can't really hate on
I don't know if I'd
Steve.
say he was great. He's serviceable. That's what I would call about Steve Zahn. Steve serviceable Zahn. He does what he needs to do.
Hell, he's always reminded me of like a Barney Rubble type of character,
This is it.
Our entire voiceover for our show on Bears is written on a cocktail napkin.
Yeah, we wrote it last night at PJ Mahoney's.
That's great. Bears derive their name from a football team in Chicago. No, wrong. It is estimated that bears kill over 2 million salmon a year. Attacks by salmon on bears are much more rare. All right, that's got to be true, right? All right, let's go with that one.
Was that Ernest
This is Strange
Borgnine?
Wilderness.
Yeah.
We have
Oh
found
my
speed
God.
In salmon a year.
I know.
How many sea
So
lions
sad.
are eaten each year by sharks? It never seems like enough.
The show sucks. 2 weeks from now, the show is canceled.
Thank you very much. We're not toast
Wow.
yet. Hey,
This is the
Junior.
very
Yeah.
2004,
You got any
2006
ideas?
starter pack of comedic actors.
Yeah.
Oh,
but sorry.
Dude, what is on your eyes?
Oh, man. I got
Well, you remember that bit?
tattoos on my
I do
eyes.
actually
They don't
remember
look
this
like what I
bit.
was
I do have a
thinking of.
memory of this
People
bit,
would
but I've
think
never
that I
seen
was
this movie
awake.
before.
It's
That's
bad.
Bigfoot.
Yeah.
No,
Of
we're
course it's
not.
bad.
This is exactly what we needed.
It has Adam Sandler's two friends. He would put in all
Yep.
his 90s movies.
Yeah, Dante and what's
Cooker,
his name from
cue the
Grandma's Boy?
Is that a thong you're wearing? Yeah, I'm wearing a thong. Sharks can only be found in two places on Earth, the northern and southern hemispheres. These sharks are attacking Nicole Richie. Yes, the shark is a what the man, look at that thing's teeth.
Strange Wilderness.
That's kind of a lazy trailer, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing is that I remember being like, okay, well, you know, Happy Madison production. You know, you're going to get funny. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, cool. The three jokes are on the trailer and they're bad. It's like, this is just when they were petering out, just like, let's, you know, try to make a movie with Alan Covert and the guy that plays Dante and what, Steve Zahn, and what's the other guy from
Justin Long.
Justin Long, yeah, from, I guess, a bunch of.
What do you think of Sandler's? I mean, what's his name? Alan what? From Grandma's Boy.
Oh, wow. The Coke really fucked me up there. Alan Covert.
Alan Covert.
I think that's his name.
What do you think about him?
I think he kind of sucks. I like him when he... I think I like the cast of weirdos that Adam Sandler has as side characters where they just pop up and they're just like... There's a guy with a goofy mustache that's kind of creepy. You know, he's got like three or four friends that play that role. I like it. I don't think... I mean, Grandma's Boy, I think it's really funny, or it was when it came out. I have it on DVD and I remember being like, yeah, this is one of like the 2000s comedies where you're just like, we're just gonna laugh at stupid shit. But I don't really think of him as like a person in movies, really. He's just like he's like the Dante character, you know, who's just,
yeah, he's kind of like, if you see one of Kevin Smith's Roundup and they're only in Kevin Smith films, I think he could have been interesting as a supporting character in other movies that didn't have Adam Sandler. But it doesn't seem like he's interested in doing that.
In Grandma's Boy, he's good as like the man-child. I guess he's good at playing the Sandler role in that movie. But, I mean, how difficult is to play that role, really?
You know, it was his first and only leading role. You never saw that guy lead a movie again.
Yeah. But, yeah, well, how difficult is to play the Adam Sandler role? You're kind of a piece of shit. You're likable, but not because your character is likable. You're just a likable guy, but your character is usually kind of a piece of shit too. You're surrounded by a bunch of dummies that, for whatever reason, always surround you and support you and everything. And they never have anything going for themselves other than what's going on in your life. And then you hook up with actresses that are way better looking than what you could realistically get. Just be likable, I guess, is the Sandler role, right? Even if, like, have you seen the space movie, the Spaceman movie?
Spaceman, no. I've heard it's good. I've heard that. I probably won't watch it anyway. Netflix doesn't make fucking good movies. Why would I waste my time with that? I don't care who's.
Well, you did like the basketball one, right?
I didn't see it. I didn't, but I've heard that one's good too.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. I feel like, watching real Sandler movies, I kind of don't want to go to a Sandler movie to watch a good performance. You know, I kind of want the child man baby role with his movies. If I'm going to watch an Adam Sandler movie, movies like Uncut Gems, I feel like they're the exception to the rule. But if you like Sandler movies, like, you don't really, you know, Punch Drunk Love is the Sandler movie I rewatch all the time. You know, you're just kind of like, okay, well, he remembers that he's an actor once every five movies. But when you go watch a Sandler movie, I don't think you're thinking, yeah, let's see this new dramatic narrative that he's... No, you're just going to see him goof around with his friends. And
Punch Drunk Love was really the 2008 pick for online message board film nerds.
Oh, yeah.
If they were trying to be outwitting the general taste of the public, where clearly everyone's going to see Mr. Deeds, they're going to see Big Daddy, and then it gradually gets worse. I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry is probably the last one before people start going, hey, he makes some really fucking stupid, horrible movies. By the time you get to Zohan, it's like, I don't think we're going to see the Adam Sandler movie that's coming out this week, guys.
And that sucks. That sucks because Zohan is probably one of the funniest one he's made in so long. That movie's so funny for reasons that you can't really do now. Like, you can't.
Yeah, it also pairs well with Zone of Interest.
Wow. Yeah. It kind of does. Yeah. But that's a funny one because When that movie came out is when comedy was petering out of offensive stereotypes, right? Like you had the Borat thing, which at the time when the movie came out was like, okay, this is the funniest movie ever. But there were still those sensibilities that were little by little slipping in there, I think. And Zohan relies on like Middle Eastern horny guy stereotypes. But it's like a legit funny movie, which you can't really say for most of 2020, 2015-ish, or 2010 to 2024 Adam Sandler movies. So it sucks because it's like buried in a bunch of shit where you kind of have to, you know, pick and choose which ones you watch. Otherwise, you'll be stuck watching like, I don't know, whatever those movies where he's playing like a secret agent or like a cobbler or like a...
What is it? The Boat Trip with David Spade. The Boat Trip with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Horatio Sands.
Well, there's one
the
with...
Last Missy.
There's one with Jennifer... That one's a big piece of shit. But he has two movie series where Jennifer Aniston is his wife, and he's just like a goofy husband that it's in a yacht, and he's being Adam Sandler and she's being Jennifer Aniston, and I think there's two of them on Netflix. So I mean, I don't think he at least has the more money made for movies that who gives a fuck, I think, in the history of movies, because if you think about his filmography, Adam Sandler thinking, every time anyone mentions Adam Sandler, what are the movies that they always mention? His first 5-6 movies, it's always Happy Gilmore, it's always what are the early ones where he's like a big kid? Was that one?
Did they just announce that they're doing Happy Gilmore 2? That they've already cast it and everything? Or did I get played here? Because I saw this on X. I think they said that Sydney Sweeney is playing Ball Cart Girl and they have Shooter McGavin back.
Well, at least he's alive, so that's good.
Yeah.
Christopher McDonald?
Yeah.
Sequel in development, according to Deadline. A script has been written.
That'll be the same level of quality as Coming to America, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They'll probably get the same guy, too, who directed it.
Or Joe Dirt, too, or...
They should get Josh Safdie to direct it, since he's America's most hated among his brother right now, I guess, and everyone he worked with. I don't know. I'd be open to seeing Happy Gilmore too. I just don't see the purpose of it. I don't see how that could be charming or interesting or not exactly what we think it would wind up being. But maybe it wouldn't. I don't know. Maybe it'd be like Ricky Stenicki in a classic new comedy.
What? So Sandler's love interest is going to be 25-year-old Sydney Sweeney now in this movie,
or it's his daughter. Because that's a subversion, you would think. But he's not that kind of guy, really. He's not. Yeah. He won't do that casting. He will cast an age-appropriate woman, usually, in his films. With him, anyway. I don't know what to expect of that. But that's all right. That's okay. I'm fine with him continuing to do more and more shit. And if he doesn't want to do shit, I'm cool with that, too. I liked Adam Sandler, but I've never felt like he's my favorite. So I'm fine with whatever he wants to do.
No, I feel like, and that's the thing with Sandler, right? It's a lot of nostalgia. It's a lot of, well, his 90s run was so good. And now, you know, he makes real movies once every 5 movies that you hear about him making. But I think he has a really good run along with people like Will Ferrell of like 4 or 5 movies where they kind of defined that era of comedy or those years or where comedy was or what comedy was shaping, I guess, in those years. I think Sandler and Will Ferrell had a lot to do with that, along with the Apatow movies in the 2000s. But yeah, I feel like a lot of the Sandler thing or the appreciation that people have for him is because of his early movies. I don't hear anyone talking about, you know.
Here's a question of his actual comedy, so don't include Uncut Gems. Don't include Punch Drunk Love. What does he do in the movies that's funny or his shtick? Because after a certain point, it became him just being like responding to a situation. And he's kind of like the quiet asshole, but not really a full asshole. Just kind of like, okay. You know, doing that sort of thing. And I think that's probably how you get longevity in your career if you're a comedic actor, because nobody will show up to see wacky 65-year-old Jim Carrey. It's just kind of weird and off-putting. And any type of actor who stuck to that and just went all the way forward with their shtick, if it was more over the top, got weeded out. Like Dana Carvey can't really tone it down and be that guy. Bill, I mean, we talked about this now on our Lost episode of B-Bang, but Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, those guys did wind up having more illustrious careers because they could tread a little lighter with that. And the people like Dan Aykroyd got pigeonholed to being dumb, goofy guy. You better go figure out another career path. All right, Crystal Skull Vodka, UFOs, hop on Art Bell. That's your new job.
Yeah, I forgot that we talked about that on that episode. Because
you were recommending highly Dr. Detroit, if I remember right. Everyone go check out Dr. Detroit.
No, I watched it. I was talking about how I watched it, and it's kind of a piece of shit. But I understand why, I guess, Dan Aykroyd will get hired to play this role, because I think he's very talented. I just don't think he has, like, leading man. He's not leading man material, but he's very good sidekick material. Absolutely. So whenever they try to make him into the leading guy, you're kind of like, okay, he's goofy. I like him. He's like a goofy guy. I don't care much for him. I don't care for him getting the girl or like him getting or succeeding or whatever. And I feel like there's also this run of movies where they try to make him cool, and he's not cool.
What movies?
So, Dr. Detroit is one where he's very goofy. He's like a kind of a dork. But then at some point, something happens when all of a sudden we're supposed to believe that, wait a second. He's actually cool now. He's wearing a red leather jacket. And it's just.
Oh, he was doing the Eddie Murphy outfit?
It seems like Urkel with Stefan Urkel, you know, where it's like, we see what you're trying to do. You're not that guy, so then it's just kind of like, well, you're goofy, you know. And the Bill Murray in Ghostbusters thing too. It's I feel like his career and Dan Aykroyd's career could have been very similar if Bill Murray looked like his shtick was more of a work than what it is. But I feel like those performances and the whole Bill Murray's shtick thing was so or seemed so effortless for him that's why it worked. It kind of looked like he wasn't even acting. It kind of looked like he was just like, I'm like too cool for the sort of situation. So my character is just not going to care. Even if he had let him and Jack Nicholson worst hairline in the history of like leading man, I want to say both of them. Where you can't find a movie where it doesn't look like they got fucking Beetlejuice hair, and for whatever reason he's like the coolest or the leading handsome person. But his personality in all these movies, he was just cool. He was just like, whatever, and he's charming, and he somehow gets the girl, even though he's got like puck marks and his face is all fucked up, and he dresses like he doesn't give a shit, you know, like he kind of looks like he stinks, you know, but he's so cool. He's so cool that you kind of go with it, and you're kind of like, okay, yes, Sigourney Weaver, of course, and Ghostbusters, she will be interested in the one that's not the biggest dork, you know, in the group. Dan Aykroyd, every time he tried to play that role, it seemed put on, and it seemed like, oh, that's not who you are. Like, you're not going to play the Chevy Chase dick leading role type of guy. You're goofy. You're like silly. You're vaudeville. You're Marx Brothers. You're all the time comedy type of guy. Very physical, very overt with your comedy, not the relaxed, I'm gonna be cool even though I don't look cool at all. I look 50 years old, I'm 23, Bill Murray type of thing, where you watch like something like Stripes, I think it's a Stripes, sorry, and you're just like, oh, this guy's like 50, he looks like a piece of shit, but all of a sudden he's getting like the girl on the movie, and then everyone's kind of looking up to him because he's kind of a shit, but he plays it off as whatever. And every time you see a Dan Aykroyd performance, you kind of want to root for him because you see what he's trying to do, but he's not that guy. So it's just I appreciate what he does in movies, but it sucks that the industry, I guess, even though for a lot of his work, I think he wrote a lot of it, which I mean kind of just tells you how self-aware he was of himself, I guess. But yeah, I feel like his career should have been better than the run that you see throughout the 80s and 90s because of how talented and how funny he was, if he was only able to, you know, get more roles that suited him instead of trying to be that guy that he's not.
You know? Well, you know what brought that to a screeching halt is Nothing But Trouble. Nothing But Trouble, which I think you did a show with Jerry on for his old podcast.
That
show's just a creative explosion of disgusting creature effects and makeup and comedy, and it's a real treat to go back and watch. But I completely understand why the hell that movie flopped and people were just like, let's never give Dan Aykroyd money again, because after that's when he goes and does Soul Man on ABC, where he's playing the preacher on the motorbike. And I referenced this on our Lost episode, and you're like, I don't even know what the fuck that is. What are you talking about? Nobody knows what that is. I only remembered it because I saw like a TV Guide advertisement for an old TV Guide I bought on eBay. I was like, oh yeah, I watched that show for 3 episodes. It got canceled for sure after 1 season. This has nothing to do with the movie we're talking about tonight, which could be considered a comedy, could be considered the best movie of the year, could be considered the best film of Jake Gyllenhaal's career. We're talking about Roadhouse from Doug Liman.
Listen,
Doug Liman of Mr. and Mrs. Smith fame.
There is a couple of jokes that I wrote down because they legit made me laugh. And I was ashamed of the laughter because of how goofy it was. But there's the him beating them up and then driving them to the hospital, I thought that was funny. It was very, that felt very 2000s comedy to me, where, you know, he's just a badass and he's beating them up, but, you know, I'm going to be nice to you guys, I'm going to drive you there, and then the drive is just very quiet and awkward. That felt very early 2000s comedy to me for whatever reason. And I wasn't expecting the stick joke where the gangster guy's like working on a stick with a knife, and then the guy that's sitting next to him, he's like, what are you whittling? He's like, oh, a stick. He's like, yeah, but what is it going to be? And he goes, oh, a smaller stick. And I was like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, I wasn't expecting goofy, silly jokes like that, so it kind of caught me off guard. Same with when he would beat people up and they would be like, I told you what I was going to do to you, and now your fingers are fucked. You know, I haven't seen Roadhouse, the original, in so long.
You've seen it, though. I've not watched this movie ever. I've been meaning to watch it because I like Ben Gazzara.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea that I didn't, because I didn't want to... you know, the appreciation that I have for 80s goofiness and 80s... nonsense when it comes to movies, it's way too big for me to have enjoyed this as much as I did, I think, if I had the other one recent. So that's why I decided to not to, and just enjoy this as like its own thing. I understand why some people are upset, because that always happens whenever you remake a 80s movie that people remember,
I think it's ridiculous that people are upset. I think it's ridiculous that there are Roadhouse purists out there. We're not talking about a movie with a gigantic lore behind it. We're talking about my impression of that movie is it's a fun, pseudo homoerotic, macho 80s guy movie with Patrick Swayze. And there's dozens of those movies. This didn't need to be that movie. You didn't need to recreate that movie beat for beat. But I've seen that be a real complaint with people online who have reviewed this film. They go, "Oh, it's nothing like the original." Well, should it be? Does it
well,
need?
That's so stupid. That's why I hate people that talk about movies online like us. Because you don't understand. And again, it's the industry, so they're remaking shit. And most of the time, they remake shit. They don't understand where the original is coming from or why it worked. So I'm not supportive of remakes usually. When it comes to a movie like this, why are you complaining? It's supposed to just be goofy fun. And that's what this movie is. Like, it's dumb. It's a dumbass movie. And
it is one of the stupidest films I've watched in recent memory. It brought me right back to two different eras of film. And it's the 90s action blockbuster and also the early aughts, same deal. It kind of felt like a Michael Bay film. I was getting flashbacks to that movie Ambulance, specifically with Jake Gyllenhaal, because he's just in this new part of his career where he's like, yeah, I'll take the paycheck. I'll do whatever.
Yeah.
I'll act like Conor McGregor's not twitching
tiny
coke. he doesn't
five,
have coke
five.
Hangers. Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's say right up front, this movie becomes a different movie as soon as Conor McGregor walks into it. And I think that's maybe a necessary turn, because you could probably only go so far on the original path that you were venturing on, with Jake Gyllenhaal being this very reserved, mitigated guy who can do a lot of damage. He can inflict a lot of pain onto people and do his job particularly well. We don't really get too much of his backstory right up front. We just know, oh, he was a UFC fighter. He did something bad. And then you learn he killed his friend in the ring. He pulled an Ivan Drago, except Ivan Drago was the enemy, obviously, here. But he did the same thing. Why? Because he just couldn't control his outburst. I think it was implied he killed him.
It was very shallow, his story, but it didn't matter, really. Like, I didn't care. I didn't care to see what he did. Whenever they would show those flashbacks of him, oh, I'm not able to sleep, I was thinking, fucking get a pillow. That pillow sucks. That pillow just looked like a cloth inside of a pillow, a pillow sheet, whatever. Yeah, I didn't care for his backstory. I think they were playing off him being a badass and him being like a known badass. I don't think you needed that. I think after the first fight where he beats up five people, that's it. You know, you moved into a small town, you beat up five people that have been causing problems in this bar for a while. You don't really need to know what his backstory is or what he did or the reason why he's so tortured or whatever. I don't think that added anything to his character.
You know what it would have been? If he had not had that UFC flashback, he's basically the driver from Drive.
Yeah.
He's a little chattier for certain. He's maybe a little more social, but he's essentially that same character.
He smiles a lot more and he's more charismatic with people, and he drinks Cuban coffee. I don't like that they didn't make a point to show the difference between Cuban coffee. Do you know what the difference between Cuban coffee and regular
coffee
is? It's
just beans.
That was a joke. And he was like, oh, I really like this. And the fat girl was like, haha. And I was like, am I supposed to know something about Cuban coffee that I don't know? What's the difference? Why is this a thing? Because he is drinking that tiny little cup throughout the movie. But I don't think that played a part into who he was, other than connecting, you know, Conor McGregor that you know outside of the movie, and him being like a threat, I guess, towards him. But how tall is Jake Gyllenhaal? Because Conor McGregor is like 5'7". So even though
he's a little guy, he looks so little.
Walking around all muscular and pumped up or whatever, he's still a little fella. You know, he's still 5'7". So even though he could probably kill you. No, Jake Gyllenhaal is like 6'2".
Okay. Well, here's a little bit of trivia you might not be aware of. Did you know this movie marks Conor McGregor's first time acting?
It shows. But it shows, but I think he was perfect for that role because of how unhinged he was supposed to be. So if he was on coke or if he was on any other mind-altering substances, it worked for his character. His character was just a destructive, I guess, muscle that the Not of course, I guess we're bringing, but I
His character
mean,
is kind of outside the world of the movie that we're introduced to up front. And then he makes the world of the movie his own in that second half, where it goes completely off the rails and becomes essentially a Transformers film without any Transformers in it. If the humans were Transformers, that's basically what this movie is. It is top to bottom from the book of Michael Bay. It's absurd. It gets more and more absurd.
Well, it is because he starts setting up his team of bouncers as like badasses too. You know how he's teaching them. He's like, oh, he's got a knife. So if he come when he comes at you with a knife, just lean back and then punch him in the face, and that works. So then he just continues getting like a team of people that know how to fight to become his team, and then they just get all beaten up by Conor McGregor. So I haven't read the negative reviews. I saw a lot of people that I follow on Letterboxd being positive about it, which made sense to me because I don't follow retards. But
Well, but hold on. For the record, I actually looked into this yesterday. Not as many negative reviews as you would think. The original Roadhouse on Rotten Tomatoes, 41%.
it's
Doug
bad.
Liman's Roadhouse, 62%. It's fresh. It's narrowly fresh.
Listen, it's not a good movie, the 80s one. So I don't mind, as much as I hate remakes, I don't mind for them to remake movies like this, you know, where it's like a ba very basic setup and you can just use that setup and whatever. Because even with this movie, they kind of set up that there's drug dealers and like there's like a cartel thing, never really comes to anything. I don't know if it was like a budget thing where they couldn't bring a cartel or whatever, but because he's the cartel in this movie is a white guy with a suit that gets killed very easily by Conor McGregor,
I was gonna say,
who's just
Conor
like,
McGregor does nothing that he is tasked to do. The
yeah.
only time he does anything of consequence, truly, is when he kills the guy who hired him's son, who's initially set up as this is our antagonist, but he's not really. He's
No, he
kind of
sucks.
the he's the the warm
Richie
up
Rich. Yeah, he's like the Richie Rich
with his
character.
Richard
He's like,
Spencer haircut.
yeah, he's like, I
I
have
did love
money.
the element of him getting a shave on the boat, though. I don't know why. I found that very enjoyable.
Yeah.
But then Conor McGregor walks in and he's basically the Terminator. He doesn't really do anything, but he makes a mess everywhere he goes. He goes to the
Yeah.
bar. And here's something I really, it's hard not to notice if you're a film fan, is about 72% of his dialogue is ADR. Now, you have to wonder, is that because he was. His accent is just so thick that you couldn't understand what he was saying, and maybe they had to like slow it down or like enunciate a little better? Or is it because he was like fucked up while he was doing this and just slurring
Yeah.
and doing.
Have you been, I don't know, have you been around people that are doing cocaine for a while
Every OFC set.
where their mouth gets a little milky and you're just kind of like, oh, the words are kind of difficult to come out of your mouth right now. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that that's what was happening here, but it's weird to have the, Italian movie like level of ADR in a movie. It's kind of like, what the fuck was he saying on set that you need to do the, lose
He
your
couldn't
cool
say, "Hey, baby, I
cheesy.
love this song."
Yeah.
You couldn't just get that clean. I mean, I don't care either way. I'm fine with it. I accept the movie on its own terms. I think it's an extremely watchable film. It's
It
great
is.
to just have on. The action scenes in it, even if they feel chock full
Bad.
of CGI,
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're good. I like the choreography of the fight scenes and everything like that, even if it's like they almost added unnecessary CG to make the contact
Yeah.
of the fists happen. Like there's
It's
scenes where it
weird.
looks like the very minor ones, you looks like he's hitting him in the face, but the impact of it isn't what you would have anticipated from like a movie level. I'm not talking about there's one scene where Gyllenhaal is boarding the boat with the main baddie, he's getting ready to take a meeting, and one of his heavies punches
And he
him in the
gets him.
face. And it's a very weak punch, and it just sounds like You know, it's not
yeah.
a poof.
He just smiles at him. Yeah. He's just like, yeah. oh, that's cute. Yeah.
Yeah. You have moments where actual contact and impact is made to the person, but there's just something artificial about it. And I'm not complaining about that. I think it all looks interesting because it's not what you would come to expect from big Hollywood action movie. And it's different. A lot of the shots look pretty different from what the expectation is going into this type of film. There's a lot of wide shots. There's a lot of very analog digital feeling shots where it's like, is this a GoPro? Did they just swap to the cheapest $60 camera on Amazon right now for
Listen,
this one?
I know that you're not as familiar as I am with this show because you've only seen a movie that's related to the show, but I felt like I was watching Burr Notice starting Jake
wow.
Gyllenhaal. It has a lot of Burr Notice-y moments where
does that take place in Florida?
Yeah,
it does, because he's Bruce Campbell's
yeah.
in a floral shirt the entire time. That's the hallmark
yeah.
of Florida.
Yeah, and a lot of like the things that happen are very Florida things, where it's just like, oh, this would only happen there. I felt like I was watching a Burr Notice episode starting Jake Gyllenhaal, so I was thrilled. I was like, okay, so main character, we don't really know his backstory. We know he's a badass. We know he's cool. We know he's gonna beat people up. Don't know why, but his entire team around him is kind of a mystery. Everyone likes him for some reason, and he's just a cool guy that knows can beat anyone up, so he just kind of smiles at everyone. He's just kind of like, all right, that's Michael Weston. obviously not as like a good looking leading man like Jake Gyllenhaal with more of a career, more charismatic.
If anyone wants to take a look, just zoom in on Hans's camera right over his shoulder right now. You will see Michael
right
Weston
here.
Beneath Frankenstein
right here. Yeah, not as charming, let's say, but and maybe it's just the Florida aesthetic, even though I don't think they go that deep into the Florida thing. A lot of it happens in like an establishment or like bars.
Oh, it's Key West. They don't I have a feeling that it probably wasn't entirely shot. They probably got some exteriors there, but that bar was probably in Hollywood, you know.
It felt like Michael Weston would have gotten hired as a bar security guy, and he would have done a job like this. And
so you're saying the movie would have been better if it was Michael Weston and it was a Burn Notice revival? That's what I'm hearing.
I mean, Roadhouse, Burn Notice. I would say think about it if you have seen more than
and
just
Bruce Campbell runs the bar. Everybody
yeah.
knows this.
Yeah.
This is how it's going to go.
No, Bruce Campbell is at the bar. He's just there. He's like
they bump into each other.
Yeah, he's the Norm character from Cheers, but it's just Bruce Campbell, and he's just there flirting with like older women.
Older than him? That's like 85. Yeah. That's 90-year-old women.
Well, you've never seen Burn Notice. That's
I guess I haven't.
His entire life is just going to rich women that are slightly older than him so that he doesn't have to pay for anything, and just his drinks and food are taken care of. So maybe you should be watching. Maybe should do a Burn Notice episode.
We've already done a Burn Notice episode. I've seen the pilot. I've seen the movie. I feel like that is the most conclusive experience one can take away from watching Burn Notice. Until they do, if Peacock brings it back, because I think it is a Peacock show technically now, then maybe we'll be in business. But until that
day. They brought Hawaii 5-0 back, right? Who would have expected?
Well,
that
was after like 50 years. You're going to have to wait 50 years for the Burn Notice revival. And by that point, you're going to be like, well, Burn Notice wasn't a little Chinese man. I don't know what the fuck this is all about. So you're never going to get the Burn Notice you want.
I mean, yeah, you're never going to get the Burn Notice you want because that one exists already. You can just watch.
Well, maybe it'll have a second coming like Suits did. Suits It had
Did
its
it?
day, no one cared, and
God.
then suddenly Netflix said, actually, you know, the most watched show on our streaming service is Suits, and then suddenly everyone's paying attention to Suits again.
Dude, Suits was my shit for like 4 years. I'm not even gonna pretend that I was like fucking Gabriel Macht, however you say his name. That guy's cool. He's in the, what is that? What's that comic book movie that didn't work at all?
The
This
Spirit.
Silence, The Spirit. Yeah, it's just, you know, he's
Frank
gonna be
Miller's
a,
The Spirit. Was he The
he's gonna be a
Spirit?
star. Yeah, he was the Spirit. Yeah.
Wow, I was just throwing that out. I mean, see, this is muscle memory of things I
Yep.
knew and I didn't even consciously know. Is
Yeah.
The Spirit. Man, I tried to give that movie a shot so many times because I love Frank Miller and
It's fucking rough. That he's got like a mole on his face that is very, very kind of like fucking get
We
rid
know
of
who
that
you
shit.
are. We identified
Yeah.
you.
You're mole guy from Suits. but I never finished Suits. I think I got to like 6 seasons in and I was like, okay, we kind of seen what goes on. And then you got the Princess of England in this show too, being like a clerk.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, what is
So
it? The other princess or whoever has breast cancer has to get a mastectomy now. Are you
what?
broken up about this?
Oh, the bald king
The
prince,
bald
his
king,
wife.
the bald king prince's wife has to get her tits removed. Or no,
Yeah.
I think it's stomach cancer or something. I don't know what the hell's wrong with her. I just assume tits because it's a woman.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I was
She
hungry and assumed tits.
had little ones anyway, so it's not a big loss. It's not like an Angelina, it's not an Angelina Jolie getting a mastectomy loss, you know,
I guess so.
which turned her into a director instead of an actor. You know, when that happened, it's like, well, I guess I'm behind camera now because my titties are sad. I should not be
Well,
saying this is a bad way to
who's gonna be
that's a
offended by
bad
that? She's
image.
like, no one in her family listens to this show. She adopts straight up African children, so that's
Right.
all right. No
And
one, no one in the Jolie Pitt clan is listening to movies.
if they did, I'm sure John Voight would be like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we
Would
should
be
get
like,
John
yeah.
Boyd on movies and try and get him to spill about Angelina Jolie. I bet you we could. I 100% guarantee we could get him on this show, but we would have to pay like $3,000 for a half
That's all
hour.
right. Yeah,
Yeah,
no,
I think
that's
I'm
fine.
good.
I think we can use those 3,000 for something better than just learning about what a whore his daughter was in the
Yeah.
2000s with Billy Bob Thornton. What was it that she was like blowing him before the MTV Awards or something? And he was like, oh, Angelina, you're so wild. It's like he's like 20 years older than me. It's
Yeah.
a little
She
weird.
was claiming at the time too. I encountered some random interview where she was like, "Yeah, I've only slept with three guys in my entire life, and Billy Bob is one of them, and Johnny Lee Miller is another one, and then the third is I don't know who."
Arby.
Which, do you believe that?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how she got there in her career. But she is a director now, right? She doesn't.
She did a movie with Jack O'Connell, who's a promising young English actor who disappeared immediately after doing three films in America, and not since.
Well, you know why, right? He's just playing like horny British guys on British movies.
Is
That's
that
his
what he
whole
does?
career.
I don't
Yeah, I'm
know.
pretty sure.
I never
I'm pretty
followed
sure.
his career.
But like soldier, he's playing British soldier on something.
That sounds right. The last thing I saw him in that he was pretty good in was a movie called Starred Up. And he went to prison, and his dad was in prison. Ben Mendelsohn played his father. And then he realized, oh, my father's someone's husband in this prison.
Oh.
So that's what that movie was. That was an interesting twist, I guess. Anyway, would you recommend
Wasn't he
Roadhouse?
to yeah to depends on who I'm speaking with,
Well,
but
who wouldn't you recommend it to?
anyone that takes movies seriously, anyone that's unwilling to just like turn off their brain and just watch some action, Batman versus Superman punching action, because I
Now
felt
hold
like
on a
the
moment. This is not, no, Batman v Superman was clearly choreographed for months. They knew what they were doing with that. That was the real deal. Batman punching a guy through a wall and then stabbing a guy in the chest and then fucking gunning down a whole room of men. Nah, they planned all that to the hilt. How dare
They
you?
did, but a lot of the punches and a lot of the action kind of felt very heavy, Batman versus Superman-ish.
Nah, I'd say it's more. I don't know if you can see that in the background. Felt more Three Stooges to me. That Shemp that my finger's right below. I felt Conor McGregor reminds me of Shemp. Because Shemp knew how to take a punch.
I mean, Champ was one of the greatest. one of the greatest Stooges, so I get what you're saying. I
Why
just
didn't we go over Shemp's filmography? You're watching Dr. Detroit. What about Shemp? Talk about underrated comedic actors.
Well, didn't he die in like 1972 or something?
That's
After like
generous.
10
I think he
years.
died in like 1951. I think he did three Stooges shorts and died.
I think he drank two Coca-Colas in 1942 and it was too much for his body and he just fucking diarrheaed his body out and just
The
died.
entire Stooge lore is so dark. It's curly. You think about it as a kid, because I had like a little Good Times home video, the history of the Stooges. And it's like, yeah, Curly died at 41 after he went insane. He
Dude,
went, he had a stroke and died in a mental institution.
I had a little curly head that if you hit it, it would say like phrases. And I remember gifting that to my dad because my dad is the one that introduced me to the Three Stooges. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So every time you hit curly, he like says something. And he was like, that's kind of fucked up, isn't it? His entire character is just beat me up so I can have a line. I don't know. It's difficult because those when it comes to the Three Stooges, when it comes to like Marx Brothers, when it comes to those early Laurel and Hardy early comedy, I don't understand the mindset of my life is fucking horrendous and everything kind of sucks because this is 1940 or 1950 or whatever, but we're still gonna be goofy on camera and like, oh, you're poking my eyes, I do this. And that to me is endearing because if I was in the 1950s going through everything that they went through, I probably would have killed myself so quickly. It's like you still have to be playing that goofy role in theater, so people that want to go see their what 10-minute, 15-minute short. But not, yeah, I don't know. It's compared to like how much money someone can make making movies now and how comfortable they can live. Whenever you look into the Marx Brothers, the Three Stooges, the Little Fucking Rascals, dude, that shit
Oh
was
yeah, the
just
Little Rascals had to endure a lot. A
that was just
lot.
abused. That was just abusing children in the 1920s. And it's just like, oh, it's just goofy and fun. Oh, look at Curly.
Well,
Aren't
this
his
could be a
cheeks
good
fun?
that might be a good segue to quiet on set. Quiet on set. I mean, we talked about it obviously, but have you gotten around to checking out any of it? No.
No, I
There's
haven't.
more to the Drake Bell stuff that I didn't know. And I watched it. I guess I've zoned out something. But after we did the show, I saw a court document that said, oh, Drake Bell wasn't just sucked off in his sleep by this adult man. He was fucked up the ass in his sleep. And they put stuff in his ass, too. And I was like, oh, wow. It's crazy that the only thing he's done is a pedophilic AOL chat as an adult. He should be fucking Jimmy Savile if they're doing that stuff to him at 10 years old, 11 years old. Like, how do you get over a 50 something, 40 something year old man up in your ass when you wake up first thing in the morning? That sounds delicious, you know?
So Josh Peck was the fat gay one, but the one that was getting fucked
He
was
was
like the fat
unfuckable to Brian Peck, no relation. So it was protection in hindsight, I guess.
How do you feel about like those? Because those documentaries are going to start coming out more and more like from now because of how much time has gone by. And especially because it's going to be coming out from the abuse that have been silent for so long. I don't even watch that. I'm honestly just kind of like, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be more documentaries coming out, though, because, I mean, there's definitely stuff that will come out, I think, as a result of that documentary being a huge talking point at the moment. But you got to think, it's got to be ironclad accusations that will hold up in court, because you're going against not just a person, you're going against a whole institution. And to do a documentary about Nickelodeon, they could only cover the things that were mainly legal matters and handled in court. Brian Peck was a guy who was hired by Nickelodeon to, I think, help the kids rehearse and deliver dialogue authentically. And he was a pedophile.
Yeah, what the fuck? Hey,
there was another guy.
While my penis is.
there was another guy. His name was like Daniel Handy, which you shouldn't hire the guy named Daniel Handy, I would say. And he was just as bad. He sent an 11-year-old girl. He's like, I just wanted you to see me thinking about you. He sent on AOL. It's always AOL, of course, back then.
Yeah.
A video or picture of himself masturbating, nude, like legs up in the air. Just fucking imagine being 11 years old and some guy you've worked with who's like, you know, you feel safe around adults at 11 years old, even though you know you're told at a young age, if you have good parents, be careful, there could be perverts. Once you get the trust of an adult, you don't really think like that. You don't think that that could happen. And then suddenly you're on AIM with them and you see fucking a man's legs up in the air and he's, you know, Jesus Christ, could that would be scarring.
You see an angle of an asshole that you would never expect. You're just kind of like, what? That's a weird shadow that your asshole is forming because of the light is hitting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's weird. It's very 90s, right?
Sure.
It's very chasing fame by the parents and not giving a fuck about what goes on with their kids, because they just, you know, we gotta have our kids be famous, even if you know the track record of children in Hollywood that come out okay after being part of projects. How many of them can you think that are well adjusted now? You have Elijah Wood. I think he's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Corey Feldman, who's now on tour with Limp Bizkit. Riff Raff.
I don't know if I would say he's like a good example of that.
Especially. Yo, we gotta hold on. This trailer's been haunting me for ages now, because I'm in a movie with Corey Feldman coming out this year called The 3-2 Pull Down. And I got some clips recently of myself in the movie, and I went and looked up Corey Feldman's IMDb. I saw some Corey clips as well from the film.
Mm-hmm.
And the video, you know how you go to somebody's IMDb profile and there's a video that automatically plays? There's a trailer to a film on Corey's profile that I had never heard of before, and it's called Lucky Fritz. I think we got to watch this trailer. Actually, you should pull it up on maybe YouTube, because it'll be slightly better quality. And I watched this movie and it made me question why I have anything to do with movies. It made me question, why do I like this thing? Why do I want to be part of this thing? Why do I want to make scripted features if this is what this medium is?
What, Lucky Fritz, is that from 2009?
It might be Lucky Fitz, F-I-T-Z, or Fritz, but yeah. And it stars Corey Feldman. If you can't find it, just go to his IMDb profile. It's going to be the video that's playing. It's the single worst trailer to a film I've ever seen in my entire life. Okay. And I felt like, wow, this is just a big old waste of time, isn't it? It's like when the comedian in Watchmen kills too many people. He's like, it's all a joke. It's just a big joke.
What a shame. He's been obsessed with her for years, and she knows nothing about it.
Why doesn't he just talk to her?
He's just too shy.
So in this trailer, Corey Feldman's about 38 years old, looking 12 years old. This is before he went full vampire, creepy gothic.
You're one lucky fella, Fritz. I don't know anyone else who's been struck by lightning on three separate occasions. Cheers.
Take him. Right here, right now.
I'll go get back to work, actually. Thanks a lot.
Lucky!
That was Leslie Luttrell.
Yeah, it was.
She's shooting Scary Windmill 2 here.
Die! Leslie, what are you thinking about, your dead hamster?
Don't touch me.
What's going on, Luck?
Every single person that's touched me has gotten this weird reaction. Everybody's trying to become friends with me.
I love you, Luck.
I'll be nice to you. Give me stuff.
Get a kiss to my Mercedes. Keep it for a few days.
You know, they wanna...
I'll introduce you to my little friends.
They don't look little at all, this.
I'm sorry, what was that line?
You could have any girl in the whole...
This.
I'll introduce you to my little friends.
They don't look little at all, this.
Oh, they don't look little at all. Okay.
You could have any girl in the whole town, in the whole country.
All I care about is Gretchen. Okay?
Now, it appears that the video is frozen on my end.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
Okay. All right.
Over here too. I don't know what's going on.
Let's recalibrate here. I don't want this to drag on any longer than it needs to. If
no,
possible.
He's just simple Mike.
That.
So you want to reach into. It seems like your jumping ahead is disrupting the video.
He's wearing overalls and yeah.
No, it's the video's not playing here. There was audio, but I think they're gonna make us watch it to completion, start to finish, uninterrupted. Yeah, the video keeps freezing every time.
Yeah.
Every time you jump ahead.
Okay. All right, let me just jump on. Well,
yeah. Let's. No. We did. No? We didn't. No, okay. There's more.
Hold on.
Of course, there's more. So, just to recap again, Corey Feldman. Well, 2009. No. I watched a little bit of that after I watched the trailer, and the movie itself is worse than the trailer. And that little that royalty free song that they got from Audio Jungle or wherever the fuck it came from plays every 4 or 5 minutes in the movie. It is this had to have been a money laundering scheme of some kind where the producer or the director or Corey Feldman himself had to wash some dollar bills and they put this movie together.
Is there any dogs skateboarding in this movie?
Don't I wish. If this was Snow Pubs 4, I'd watch it twice. I'd buy a ticket to the theater.
I just found a German trailer, apparently.
Kann ich mal vorbei?
Mach sitz.
Okay, it's got better music already. This is so much better. This is 100% better. I'm more invested and interested.
So the premise is that whoever he touches just wants to fuck him, is that it?
Essentially.
Hallo, meine Hollywood Freunde.
And he's doing the thing we haven't talked about here is he's doing an Irish accent.
Oh, does he?
Did you not hear his voice? That's not his natural voice. He's doing an accent here. Funny scene.
No. Okay, so guys, jerking off.
Leslie Luttrell is... Der Wahnsinn.
Okay, this is German.
Why is there a time code at the bottom? Somebody in production uploaded this.
So that's just jerking off, talking to Corey Feldman as he jerks off. Sweaty.
Oh, this is also in German? Okay.
A very masculine voice for
yeah, truly. All right, go back to the American English trailer so we can watch the last 40 seconds or whatever there was of it.
Well, the whole movie, that's not the whole, is that the whole movie? Yeah.
No. That is the whole movie. It's the first. Yeah, try this one. We're taking a look at Lucky Fritz.
keep it for fucking, you know, they 360p is the...
How's the IMDb quality trailer somehow better than YouTube? Sick. That's all right. It's fine.
You could have any girl in the whole town. You don't need 4K for this trailer, really.
No.
Oh, he fucks a dog.
But you don't want to use this power?
I want it to be real.
I just assumed that you and he were...
Gay?
Yeah!
Well, that's just fantastic.
There's a part in my movie that's perfect for you. You'd be playing a farmer's son.
I'm gonna shoot you with my broom.
Okay. It's a gun, not a broom.
He's amazing, isn't he?
Oh, the door was God. Unlocked.
I'm ready, God! Take me!
So is this Corey Feldman's Joe Dirt?
You know, I guess it is. It would have been about 6 years after Joe Dirt. 7 years, maybe. Ugh.
Shit.
That's one of the worst things that's ever been played on the show.
It's so sad that someone that has had an actual career in the 80s, I guess, was not able to use the talent that he was able to. Because, I mean, he was very good as a kid. You know, he was like a good act. He was a good actor as a kid, especially because kids usually suck. But now that he's what, like 50 something, and he's still kind of trying to play a very similar role that he did when he was like 12 13,
no, that's spot on. He never evolved his acting abilities for adulthood. It doesn't seem like all of the things that he was known for, it's kind of like he's trying to tap into that at 50, and it just comes across weird. It comes across very off-putting. So
You're creepy now, right? You're not like a fresh face, you know, rosy cheeks child that, oh shit, he's like the rough kid, you know, so he's going to have the rougher jokes, and he's going to have some lines that you're kind of like, oh, a child is not supposed to be saying that.
Yeah.
But now you're 55 and you're still like a, the look is very similar to when you were, so when you were 12,
somehow, you know, the modern vampire leather jacket, yeah, drug-induced pale skin is—it's
worse.
I don't think it's worse. I think that what we just saw is worse because he's pushing. He's got to be almost 40 in the time of that trailer, and he's in overalls. He's got little bangs, and he's got a little boy's haircut, and he's acting boyish. And in the movie, which I watched a little bit of it, I skipped around because I was like, I've never hated something related to film so much before than this Lucky Fritz. I skipped to the end, and the whole thing is he's too shy to ask out the girl of his dreams. And it's like, dude, you're an adult man. Why? What the hell is wrong with you? And then he finally does after she like engineers him to do that. And she goes, interesting, and then walks away. And they don't get together until 5 years later when she comes back.
Do you finish watching this movie?
I skipped to the end. I didn't watch anything in between. I checked out the first 5 minutes, and then I skipped to the very end.
So, I've done that. Where you just fast forward throughout the movie. You're like, okay, I know what's coming. And then what happens? You're just like, okay.
I just wanted to see how is this going to get wrapped up. And within that 10-minute stretch that I watched, they played that, you know, Fisherman Fish Stick theme song over and over and over again. It was grating to the point where I wanted to put knives in my ears. So that's Lucky Fritz.
I think whenever you use actors like him, instead of adding to your movie, I think they take away from it. And it's gotten to the point where it's sad now, because if you have like an older 80s actor that was someone, let's say, or like a early 90s young actor, I guess, he just kind of takes away from your movie more than it helps. So I don't understand why people continue to pay $7,000 for a washed up, whatever actor to be in your movie. Like, that's going to add anything. And Unfortunately, as good as he was as a kid or as a teenager, I mean, when was the last time you saw a Corey Feldman performance and you were like, okay, cool. All right. I believe you as that guy, you know? Fucking Lost Boys, the first one.
Lost Boys, The Thirst, The Tribe, yeah. One of the directed DVD sequels he did at the same time as this movie. Yeah, I don't know.
Where he's wearing a fucking bandana and he's like, I'm cool now because of my bandana. And he's like,
I think the real problem is overacting. It seems like he can't not overact. If he tried to do something a little more subdued, he could be conceivably good in a performance. I mean, from what I've seen in the movie that I'm in with him, I don't think he's bad, but he's Corey Feldman.
Yeah.
Well, you No. You saw raw footage. I've seen what it actually looks like in the movie. Okay. And the raw footage was bad.
The raw footage.
There were multiple takes in the raw footage, so there's not always going to be a good take. Sometimes there's some rough takes. Sometimes it's not very whatever, but in the movie it plays like how it's supposed to play, because I don't think you knowingly cast Corey Feldman in 2024 unless you're distinctly looking for Corey Feldman.
Yeah, making fun of him, making a joke.
I don't know. It's this character, who knows, but it's no Roadhouse, I'll tell you that.
Let me ask you, because when we were shooting Mass State Lottery, there was like a thing, this idea that you had of like hiring like an established person so that they would give us a name to the movie. Have you, are you glad that you didn't go that route?
Yeah.
Because
Because imagine, here's the thing. We got
Eric
Buddy
Roberts
Duress.
Mass State Lottery or...
Yeah, we got Buddy Duress, and Buddy Duress was a real established great actor with a lot of indie cred, and I was very fortunate that he decided to act in the movie, that he liked the script, that he liked the character, and he did great. And frankly, if we had cast somebody like Eric Roberts in that antagonist role, I don't know what Eric Roberts would have brought. I don't know if he would have signed on for the same reasons that Buddy Duress signed on for, or would have brought that same level of energy or quality, and it might have brought everything down. That's a very fair assumption to make based off of what we see from Eric Roberts. You can say, hey, Academy Award nominee Eric Roberts is in this movie, but what, because of his decisions, what does that actually mean? Because we've watched Tubi movies that people shot on their fucking phone where he pops up and he's talking with his wife and it looks stupid. It looks bad. You can use him, like if you have enough confidence and swagger and you really know what you're doing, you can take that guy and you can use him. But even if you do know what you're doing, you got to know how to manipulate that kind of guy into giving you what you need for the project. And, you know, I think there's a lot of unmitigated risk with taking on that kind of actor, because it's in their hands as much as it's in your hands, and you might not be able to milk a good performance out of him, and you could use that couple thousand dollars a hell of a lot better for production. I think we did.
I think if you have a movie like The Expendables where you have a budget of $100 million and you can just be like, people remember Eric Roberts, then that's fine. But using someone like him or someone like a washed up actor just because it's a name they recognize to bring up the level of the movie, I think a lot of them kind of do that for their careers when they're petering out like this. And if you look at Eric Roberts' IMDb, there's like fucking 500 movies where you don't recognize 400 of them because of the money aspect of it. And I think when we watched the trailer for that movie, where I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember there was a lot of like a mountain shots and a lot of like we're inside of an RV that we just rented scenes, where I was like, okay, I don't think that even if it's like an established person, there's that much that they could add to a movie. And at the end of the day, just paying like fucking $7,000 for someone that's barely going to be there, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm so glad that that wasn't, especially because you kind of just get what they give you, right? Especially for someone
I talked to Mark Rappaport, who People would probably best know him as the producer of Scary 61st, but he acts in the movie as the lead character's boyfriend. He's a very funny guy. He's a talented producer and director. He worked with Eric Roberts, and he gave me some insight on what to expect when working with him. And I guess Eric is very no bullshit, which to me reads as he's going to give you a couple takes, and then that's that. Then you're moving on, which is not the ideal situation. Is, oh, Eric is directing himself. Now, obviously, he's been in show business for 40, 50 years. He has a hell of a lot more knowledge about what's, you know, how things go on set and with production than anybody just starting up. But you still want the actor to respect your role as director. I'm not saying that would be the case or not the case. I'm only assuming. I wouldn't even be interested in casting Eric Roberts unless I was a fan of his work. But like Corey Feldman here, modern Eric Roberts is not Eric Roberts in Runaway Train or Star 80 or even The Dark Knight. You know, so it, you know, you don't know. I wouldn't be opposed to working with Eric Roberts, but it just was not probably the smartest decision for Mass State Lottery. And I'm glad we didn't go with that, because the sort of heightened reality of the movie fits better with what we wound up doing with Jerry as that character instead. So that's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine by me.
It also, I think if you have someone like a Christopher Nolan that wants to bring back Eric Roberts and give him like a small role where he's a recognizable face that people 20, 30 years later can be like, oh, I remember. All right, that's a face that I recognize. That's fine. But when it comes to like a initial or like a one of the first projects, and you have someone like that, especially because he's probably not going to respect you, you know, because of the, you know, his career that he's had, where he's worked with a lot of people. So I think, yeah, it's probably a very good thing that we didn't end up spending a bunch of money on someone that might just be difficult, especially when they get to, like, how old is he? Like 60, right?
I think he's in his early mid 60s.
Yeah. So it's like, and I just say this because of the experience that we had with the other actors that we used that were outside of our group, where, you know, that scene at the bar that I have with, I can't remember his name, but
come on, you don't remember Liam's name? Liam, who's been on this show as a guest?
No, not Liam. No, the bald detective guy. Remember
bald detective. Oh, Patrick.
Patrick. Yeah. Because that whole scene, if you had someone that maybe has a little bit of an ego or more, when they're working with someone as inexperienced as me as an actor, like, I think he helped me a lot to, you know, work with him and play around with what he was trying to do. Mm-hmm. If you're dealing with someone that already has a career and has been in bigger movies, and it's at a point of their career where they just don't give a shit and they're just like drunk or depend on other things to give you a little bit, it's probably better to just get an unknown person that's hungry, as opposed to someone that's hungry for the money and not the, you know, the role or the movie that they're actually making, you know. And
yeah,
and that's the thing with hiring people like Eric Roberts. And I'm just using him as an example because he was like one of the names that was thrown out, because,
well, there was conversations with his people, it was gonna happen. Yeah. And then we thought otherwise,
but because of where he is right now in his career, you just kind of have to look at it and be like, is that really going to elevate the level of what you're trying to do or add anything positive to it, other than, hey, this guy that's made 500 movies where you remember five of them, is adding that much, you know? And I think it's when it comes to, yeah, someone like Nolan, where he can just be like, listen, Eric, you're gonna be here for 2 days and you're delivering five lines and thanks for doing this, is different that you're going to come in with like your ego and your experience that's more than us. I mean, obviously we're going to be starstruck and a little intimidated by the fact that he's been on things that are more recognizable, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, are you really getting
he's an Academy Award
of
now.
Value? Yeah, but are you going to get anything of value of working with the person that's like 30 years away from an Academy nomination? You know what I mean? So it's kind
I don't
of
know.
Like,
I mean, it's hard to say. It's very hard to say.
It's kind of like, I don't know. I like the fact that we use Jerry instead.
He'll be in the sequel. He'll play the same character in the sequel, maybe.
Yeah.
And we'll just hide this episode where it's Han saying, "You fucking suck, and you sucked for 35 years. I'm glad money wasn't wasted on you, jerk."
Hey, Star 80 was your best performance in the last 30 years, you piece of shit. It was so long ago.
All right. Let's put a pin in the show for now.
So Roadhouse. Roadhouse is definitely not a movie theater movie, but if you have a couple of hours to waste night and you want to spend a fun time with someone watching an hour and a half movie, 2024 movie, you're not gonna really have that much fun with anything more than this hour and a half, where it's just very silly and very, you know, what you were expecting for this type of movie.
That's absolutely right. I watched it, and then the next day I watched it again with my mom, and she said Roadhouse was good.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. That was the perfect experience. All right. That's it. That's what I wanted here. All right. We had dinner. We watched Roadhouse. You liked Roadhouse. That's all I needed to get. And that's what this type of movie is. I know Doug Liman was unhappy and he almost boycotted the premiere because Amazon told him at the last minute, this is not going to theaters. We're going to drop this on streaming. And if you're Jake Gyllenhaal, you're probably like, why the fuck did I just do a streaming movie? And Conor McGregor is probably too coked out of his mind to give a fuck either way. He doesn't even know what the difference is. I think it's exactly what it needs to be, and it's a good, fun movie. So, and I say fun in the best way, not in a contrarian, it's you know, whatever, but it's what movies used to be.
Yeah, and it's also like, all right, fucking Doug Liman, we understand that you're not happy with this movie, but also, what have you done the past?
I think he's done some big movies. Hold on a second. Let's check this out. I know he did some 20 years ago, but I feel like he might have had one recently.
You got Lockdown, which is a 2021 movie starring Chiwetel Ejiofor and Anne Hathaway for HBO Max. Okay. You got American Made.
He's worked with Tom Cruise a few times. Edge of Tomorrow is the one where people go, oh yeah, that was a flop, but that was actually good.
Yeah.
It is.
I enjoy that. Yeah. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the TV series.
No, the original. The original.
Oh yeah. Jumper, which was a big piece of shit in 2008.
Damn, I had an ex-girlfriend who used to love that movie, and I was like, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when they were trying to do Hayden Christensen into like a leading guy because of Star Wars. And it was like, oh, that died immediately after Jumper. So he did Burn Identity, fine.
Yep.
Two episodes of The OC, Mr. and Mrs. Smith movie, Jumper, a movie called Fair Game in 2010 that Naomi Watts and Sean Penn about the CIA whatever. Yeah. No one cares.
He did Swingers. That was the big surprise when I checked out his filmography, is he directed Swingers, which is what gave Jon Favreau his start.
And also,
Vince Vaughn, too.
Vince Vaughn, yeah. But also, have you seen Swingers?
I watched Swingers again recently, and it is extremely 90s.
It works. Okay.
I mean, look, you got to be from that period of time and fix your perspective on the movie to that, because otherwise there's a lot of corniness and a lot of cringe stuff in there that only makes sense for a 90s sense of humor.
Yeah, I think him complaining about this movie not being his movie or whatever, it's like, well, you're working with a big company, so they're going to do that to you. But also, you haven't done anything since, I want to say, 2017 American Made Tom Cruise movie, just because it's a Tom Cruise movie. I've never seen it. Besides that, Edge of Tomorrow, 2014. So is Doug Liman really a name, or is just like, fuck yeah, you know, Doug Liman movie?
I remember he was supposed to do the Justice League Dark movie after Guillermo del Toro didn't want to do it. And I'm kind of glad that movie never happened.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds very. What is that director whose name is just three letters?
Pitoff? McGee.
Yeah, McGee. His career seems very McGee to me. So the
it
fact
is
that he's
no, he's absolutely one of those guys, one of these offshoots of Brett Ratner and Michael Bay.
Yeah.
He's definitely on that level.
Yeah. So,
wow.
I mean,
okay.
I think Roadhouse. I had fun watching it. It took me back to maybe let's not say 80s, but maybe 90s goofy.
No, it's definitely 90s early aughts mesh.
Yeah.
Kind of almost like if you had watched a Jean-Claude Van Damme action movie and then placed it into the hands of a Brett Ratner or Michael Bay. That's what the vibe of this movie is. I think it is a blast to watch. And the big thing about it that I noted on X, is that for as bad as Conor McGregor is, the dude has screen presence in a movie star way, and you don't get that anymore. And it's refreshing to see. And I think people are trying to understand that right now because he's not good at all in his delivery and his performance as an actor, but he still brings something positive to it. And I don't think it's an ironic positivity. It's not like, oh man, you gotta, I mean, there is an element of like, he's so bad that it's enjoyable, but I think there's just a flat element of this guy's a character and it's enjoyable to see that on the screen and play out as this antagonist. So that's,
you know what, it reminded me of an 80s villain. It reminded me of Johnny on Karate Kid or Kickboxer. You know, you have the big Asian muscular guy where they're kind of badasses, but there's not really that much behind their character at all. So it's more of a cartoonish, I want to say Bluto with Popeye villain where, yeah, he's bigger than our hero and he's better at fighting, I guess, but we know that our guy is going to beat him at the end. And he's just kind of like a cartoonish villain. And that works for this type of movie. I think, sure, Conor McGregor is not the biggest guy in the world. So if you see like a little 5'6", 5'7" guy that's like all pumped up, he's still probably like 150 pounds. So it's not a very intimidating figure, you know. But at the same time, they give him enough. They give him enough show enough from the 80s role, you know, from The Last Dragon. I don't know if you've ever seen it, where he's just a goofy villain that is not threatened by anyone for reasons unknown because we don't really know that much about him. But he just shows up and you immediately think, okay, so there's the threat. You know, there's not really much to it. We don't really need to know his background. And that's a very 80s Big Trouble in Little China villain where it's just like, oh, he looks like he could do something. We're not really going to know much about his backstory. He's just going to be poked out and acting like he's fucking Scarface in the movie. And it works. But I don't think, I mean, again, I haven't really read many of the complaints about the comparison to the original 80s movie, but that's like complaining about Hollywood remaking Barfly and then being like, you know, Mickey Rourke's character. He's kind of not as mean as he was on the 80s Barfly.
Well, that would be a weird one to do. I don't know if that's one-to-one because that's about Bukowski. That's like about a real person.
He's just a piece of shit, yeah. But if he wasn't, but let's say the Mickey Rourke character is not a piece of shit anymore. And then in the movie, it's like, oh, we're making him. But now he's handsome. And now he's
a handsome mixed race young man.
Yeah, it's got a lot going for him. And you know what? He's not just a loser that hangs out at his bar hoping that people would buy alcohol for him. Now he's got a... And it's just like, no. Just...
Now he's the dance king. And everyone calls him the bar fly, ironically, because he's such a stud. You know, here's one thing I you know, we didn't get into, and I just accidentally came across this. This movie was in development for over 10 years. And the original version of it was supposed to be directed by Nick Cassavetes, best known as John Cassavetes' son, but best known as a director for directing Alpha Dog, John Q.
Hell yeah.
Very like middling action movies. He also did She's So Lovely, which was based on his father's script and story. And it was supposed to star Ronda Rousey. And then...
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
She lost some fight and retreated from doing that. So... it was her first loss, I guess, as a fighter, and then it kind of killed the enthusiasm for her in that role. So that was an all
So we got
risk,
a
all reward match, I guess.
yeah, we got a
Anyway,
better barfly. No,
I
better
guess so.
a barfly. It's not barfly. It's a roadhouse. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 'cause again, the strength of the Gyllenhaal character is that he's so disconnected from even when people are trying to bring him and be a part of like the community or be a part of like what's happening there. He just doesn't give a shit. Like there's that girl at the bookstore where she constantly tries to like, you're a badass. You come help us be a part of this thing that we're trying to build here. He just doesn't care. He's just like, I'm just gonna ride a bus and go somewhere else.
Here's another interesting factor too. Maybe it wasn't ADR with Conor McGregor. There was apparently a lawsuit because they used AI voices of actors to complete the
Oh.
movie during the strikes.
How fucking difficult is for a millionaire to get a nice microphone that you can just record your audio from not there? Like, we fucking do it, and my microphone sucks. And the last time I recorded audio, we were like, this is the best recordings that I've ever had from you. And this is like a fucking $70 microphone. So it's difficult for me to think that it's going to be so jarring for someone like Conor McGregor. Like, you can't fucking afford a good
I mean,
microphone with your
honestly, the AI
computer.
might have
Like,
made his acting better in any case. It might have corrected some things there. But anyway,
but
we're
did
gonna
you
we're,
want
we oh,
did you want
we
good
yes,
did you want a
I
good
mean I wanted a clear enough enunciation from one Conor McGregor, and we got it. But I think, I don't know. I don't know if I really buy that as AI. I think that was probably ADR when all was said and done. This was probably a baseless. How can you even prove that? How can you
Yeah.
prove it's AI doing the actors' voices? You would need, and the lawsuit came from the screenwriter of the original movie. So he's just looking for a paycheck. He's just looking for, oh, I didn't get enough money from this. Well, I'll go
Well,
write another fucking movie.
that's what the industry does, right? Didn't they have that? They had that well, like a month strike or something, and then they got nothing, and it's like, oh, great, okay, cool,
They
and then
got
just.
some things that they were looking for up until next year, basically. So, okay, you got an extension, and then you got to go strike again. It's something along those lines. It's a not permanent deal. And I think just the AI thing is unstoppable. But there are people, I mean, Late Night with the Devil is getting crucified for
Is
using
it?
AI
Oh.
over like the TV show logo or something, and someone's like, wait a minute, that pumpkin has too many eyes. Uh-oh, I'm boycotting this movie. Go buy a ticket to another movie if you want to see this. Thank God for piracy. And the same people who advocate for piracy are against the use of AI, which, like, the logical,
That doesn't make any
like,
sense.
rationality does not fucking work at all, but
No,
that's all right. People are
because
stupid.
I like piracy. It's my favorite thing in the world. Otherwise, I wouldn't see any
That's how this
movies.
show happens. This would
Yeah.
not be a podcast if it weren't for piracy. Fact.
Imagine it's just like, hey, let's fucking talk about this 80s movie that's on this website. Not because they're putting out anything. If there was no piracy, I would watch no modern movies. Again, I guess we go back to like, what are you expecting from this role too, right? Why is it that people are giving so much value to it's a fucking B movie from the 80s, you know what I mean? So it's like, I understand that Patrick Swayze and the Neon Rod House logo is recognizable, but who gives a shit? It's like the whole outrage about the Big Trouble in Little China. Listen, I love Big Trouble in Little China. I think that movie is so funny and so weird for its time. Why would anyone be outraged about them updating it with like the, I mean, I don't know if The Rock's still gonna do it, but that was like 20 years ago or whatever. And it's like, okay, I hate the remakes. I understand. But then when it's a very basic movie that doesn't really have that much behind, and then they make a fun, modernized version of it. Why is it that it's always going to be negative? It's a fucking 80s whatever movie, you know? It's not like you're remaking Birth of a Nation, and even when they did that a couple of years ago, that was also
well. That was not a remake. Yeah. That was some guy trying to take it back, and then they said, "Actually, you gang raped a woman into killing herself. We're gonna have to." I know this is the highest sold movie in the history of this festival. Boy, do they regret that fucking check that they signed. But that was it. That was a wrap for him. And no one's seen or heard of him since.
And I think. Fair, like if you're making movies that make no sense, like the Joe Dirt movie, where it's just like, or like what you said about the Happy Gilmore movie, we're just extra shit. We're just gonna modernize the thing that would go against the reason why that movie worked. Fine, but something like it's like again, we're remaking Kickboxer. Why are you complaining about Kickboxer getting remade? It's like. Kind of a shit. No. Ricky O. We're making Ricky O. And it's just like, yeah, that movie's always going to be fun and stupid. Mm-hmm. But why is it that it's so sacrilegious to remake those movies again?
The thing is, here's what the thing is. I think that the argument of the remake ruins my childhood, that whole thing, I think that's not as easy to dismiss as what people would want it to be, because you can take a look at any of the Star Wars movies, and those later sequels do start to decline on the they chip away at the original movies and how good they were, because it changes the context around how they exist. Same with that first Iron Man movie. That Iron Man movie, I thought it was great in 2008. 40 movies later, I'm like, I never want to fucking see Iron Man again. I couldn't imagine sitting down and watching that original Iron Man anymore. With a movie like Ricky O, like you're saying, that movie's so wholly unique in what it's doing. You can't capture that same sort of energy. The most you can do is make a failure. There's not a legacy franchise to that. That's like, oh, we're going to, you know, at worst with a movie like that, you're going, oh, and then there was a forgettable remake like Point Break. Yeah. Point Break has a forgettable remake.
Yeah.
So that's the worst outcome.
Oh, no, I think it was Point Break.
Point Break. They haven't done Cliffhanger yet. With this movie, it's probably the rare example of, hey, the remake worked. The remake, I think, is successful, and hopefully people take to it, because it was a blast. All right. That has been movies. We got to wrap up the show. The movies went on an extra, like, 25 minutes here. That has been movies for this week. Sign up for the $100 tier. Pick our next film. We have The Holy Mountain. Available now. That was courtesy of Hot Dog 10.
Well, that's not the episode we lost, right?
No, okay. No. Okay, we lost good, the bang.
Okay.
No, I feel like we did a good job talking about that, all things considered. I was worried we weren't going to have too much to say, but I think we did a good job. Anyway, again, that's been movies for this week. Thank you for listening.